This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan, broadcasting live from the Knight Studio inside the Newseum in Washington, D.C. NPR political editor and junkie Ken Rudin is with us, and we've been chewing the scenery and the week's political news. In a moment, we'll be speaking with Congressman Ron Paul. If you have questions for the presidential candidate, if you want to tell us what you think he contributed to this year's campaign, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and you can read what other listeners have to say on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And here with us at the Newseum, Congressman and candidate Ron Paul, author of a new book, The Revolution, A Manifesto. And thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And the first question, I guess, is you're still running?
Right. Right now I'm sitting.
Well, we knew that.
Yeah. But, I'm still running. There's still a race to be run and battles to be fought, and goals may be a little bit different now. But, yes, we're still very much involved. The political process offers a great opportunity for all of us.
And have you been out campaigning actively in these states?
Sure. Tomorrow I'll go to Kentucky. We have a couple events there, and I had a couple big rallies in North Carolina and Indiana, and we get large crowds out. We're still getting very, very large crowds. I mean, in terms of thousands of people come out.
And meaning no disrespect, John McCain has the delegates pledged to win on the first ballot. Why are you doing this?
Well, he doesn't have the hearts and minds of the conservatives and the libertarians out there who feel like this country's going in the wrong direction. And for some reason, there's a lot of people who think the Republican Party's not going in the right direction. One time on stage in a debate, I said the Republicans have lost their way. Well, these recent elections might defend my position there, losing all these elections. So, yes, there's a lot of discontent out there. They're hoping that John McCain can pull it all together, acting more like a Democrat, but a lot of people aren't all that happy with it.
We have a question here at the mic at the Newseum. Sir, could tell us your name, where you're from, and tell us your question.
My name is Sid Goss. I'm from Rapid City, South Dakota. My question for Mr. Paul is, what is it that drives you to continue in this race?
Well, what drives me is what probably has driven me ever since the first time I ran for office in 1974, and that is to change the direction of the country. I think we have embarked on a direction that has been incorrect and wrong for us for dozens of years, if not decades. I mean, since the Woodrow Wilson era, or even before that, we've gone wrong on foreign policy. Since 1913, and especially in 1971, we've gone the wrong way on monetary policy. After the Depression, which was blamed erroneously on freedom, we've gone the wrong way, and we needed a nanny state, cradle to the grave. And now we're totally bankrupt. The domestic policy's wrong. The monetary policy's wrong. The foreign policy's wrong. And it's all un-American and unconstitutional. So I'm driven by the fact that if we'd follow the rule and follow the law and follow the Constitution, we could solve some of these problems and take care of our people a lot better than we're taking care of them now.
Thanks very much for the question, sir. Involved in that, I mean, a lot of Ronald Reagan's presidential bid was to roll back the New Deal. Do you think he did enough of that, or would you go further?
Well, I don't think he – what did he roll back? Can you remember? I mean, the first thing we did was – I remember the first vote I had to cast. I was a Ronald Reagan supporter in 76. I led our delegation. I supported him in 1980. I had high hopes. But the very first budget, I voted against it. It was three times as big as the Carter budget. And then the deficit just totally exploded, and they bought into this idea – of the supply siders, that if you cut taxes, you'll have more revenues and everybody's going to be happy. And that's not my goal, is to get more revenues. You have to cut spending. And here we are, we don't generate the revenues we need, and yet nobody cuts back. Right now, today, maybe tomorrow, we're going to vote on a supplemental bill, which is off budget, doesn't follow the rules. It's an emergency funding for the war. The Democrats have added money for the war, and then they've added on another $25 billion of extra stuff here at home, and there's no money over there. So I would say that we're in a big mess, and when Ronald Reagan ran, nothing changed. When Republicans took over in 94, nothing has changed. When finally the Republicans take over in 1990, if they believe any of their rhetoric, we'd have done something. So what the old position was, we used to want to get rid of the the Department of Education. And Ronald Reagan talked about it. He never did anything about getting rid of it. So what is the program now for the Republicans? Well, they doubled the size of the Department of Education. I mean, it's going downhill, and we're going to face a bankruptcy. And we can't even finance taking care of our elderly here at home or their medical needs or the war without borrowing tens of billions of dollars from the Chinese. And that's the situation that we have to face up to one of these days.
If Ronald Reagan was a failure as a president, or let his conservative followers down, if John McCain is not conservative enough to be the Republican nominee, what keeps you in the Republican Party? Why not run as a libertarian as you did in '88?
Well, because it's more practical to run as a Republican. And I've been a Republican. I've run 10 times. So I've been able to talk exactly as I've just been talking and deliver that message to my district, and they keep reelecting me.
Will you be running for reelection in the fall?
Well, I had a primary opponent. Those other Republicans said, we've had enough of him, and they gave $300,000, and I got 71% of the vote. And the Democrats have decided that even though it's a marginal seat, they don't have an opponent for me. So I would say I'm not running in the fall, but I'm walking gracefully into another 2 years. So I would say that, this message is something that can be sold. I stay in the Republican Party because there's nothing I say that is not traditional Republican conservative limited government rhetoric. It is obey the Constitution, defend personal liberties, balance the budget. How did we beat Clinton on our foreign policy in the year 2000? President Bush ran on no policing in the world. Don't be a nation builder. Traditionally, I mean, who got us into Korea? Republicans didn't do it. Eisenhower got us out. Who got us into Vietnam? Johnson. The Republicans were supposed to get us out in 1968, and I was in the Air Force during that time, and I watched it closely. So, the Republican tradition is pretty strong. You know, the old right Taft position was very, very libertarian, pro-Constitution.
But that's a half a century ago. When Ronald Reagan left the Democratic Party, he said, I'm not leaving the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party left me. And when John Anderson left the Republican Party in 1980 to run for president, he said, the Republican Party is too conservative. It left me. Could Ron Paul say the Republican Party is not the Republican Party that it was of the Taft wing of the party?
I could, but it's back to the practicality of things because, some people say that I had a successful year in talking to a few people and talking about the old right being anti-war and why you can still be a conservative and pro-American and patriotic and not have to endorse unconstitutional wars. I couldn't have done that if a year ago I had announced that I was going to be a Libertarian Party candidate. You probably wouldn't even have me on my show today. I mean, it would be insignificant. I wouldn't have a book. I mean, it isn't so much that I'm a great writer. It's the information now that has become appropriate that has attracted people to the book. So the laws are very biased. If you belong to the Green Party, if you belong to the Socialist Party, the Libertarian Party, the Constitutional Party, all the rules are biased against you. You don't get into debates, you don't get recognition, and you can't get on the ballots. In 1988, I spent more than half of the money just trying to get on ballots, and I still couldn't get on all 50. So we talk about democracy, spreading democracy, and we fight and die, telling other peoples you will be good Democrats and have fair elections. And really, we have a tough time here to allow alternative views to get into the mainstream.
Just to note, we've had...
You're not included in the accusations here. I think I've been treated very fairly on NPR.
Okay, well, that's nice. Also, we hope to treat Mr. Barr fairly, and Mr. Nader's already been on the show. But anyway, let's see if we get a caller on the line, and this is Michael. Michael with us from Toledo, Ohio.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to ask Congressman Paul, I've been a libertarian since 1996.
We're having a hard time hearing you there, Michael.
Sorry, is this better?
Yes, that's better.
I was saying I've been a Libertarian Party member since 1996, and I was really gung-ho about Congressman Paul's campaign, and I was excited to see about his big fundraising numbers. And then I heard the radio ads in Toledo where he was kind of talking about NAFTA and these kind of egg-headed things that, in my experience, people don't care about. And it kind of turned me off of the campaign. And my question is, as libertarians, how do we popularize our message?
Well, I would hope that one radio ad isn't used for the total judgment of the campaign. But I would say that, you know, I just ran this election, and you do look at the practical issues. And in my district, one of the biggest issue was the possibility that we will have a North American Union, and that we'll have highways, superhighways running, from Mexico to Canada, and it's an outgrowth of NAFTA. I'm a free trader, and I believe in that. But these are real issues. So maybe it was the wrong ad in the wrong place. But boy, I'll tell you, it is a big issue: national sovereignty, and whether we're talking about NAFTA and CAFTA and WTO.
I agree with you.
That's
people's perception about the North American Union. Have you heard of any negotiations about a North American Union?
Sure. They're meeting all the time. And there's articles written about it. Yeah, I believe that it's as preliminary as it was. How many years did it take for a European Union to be established? I mean, even CFR have articles talking about the Amero, a single currency. No, I think it's very real. I don't think it's coming tomorrow. I don't think we should step night worrying about it. But if you worry about national sovereignty, I mean, people say, well, the UN, they're wonderful. They give us peace. Well, the first thing they gave us was the Korean War. Now we have the WTO. And what do they do? What does the WTO come to? They're coming in and they want to take over all our nutritional substances for the benefit of the drug companies. So the corporations just get control of these international governments, and that's what happens on all these trade agreements. I'm for free trade, but these trade agreements, they pretend they're for free trade, but they're for managed trade for the special interests, the big corporations, and the banking system.
South Korea wasn't worth defending?
Not if you lost your son over there. I don't think it would be. It wasn't declared. It wasn't declared war. I mean, this was an atrocious overstep on the bounds of what our Constitution said. Only declared war by the U.S. Congress. And we went in there and lost 50-some thousand people were still there. And we don't have any money. We're going broke. And the audience I talk to, I'm very well received when I say, it's time to come home, not only from the Middle East, come home from Korea, come home from Europe. We're broke. Let's take care of our people here at home. It just won't last.
We're talking with Congressman and Republican presidential candidate Ron Paul. He's also the author of a new book called The Revolution, A Manifesto. We're live at the museum. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 800-989-8255. You can zap us an email, talk@npr.org. Of course, our other guest is Ken Rudin, who's with us here every week as NPR's political junkie. He writes the Political Junkie column, which you could read this week and every week when he finishes it on npr.org. And he's assuring us that he did his homework this week.
I swear.
Last night?
Absolutely.
Yeah? Okay. So you can go to npr.org and read that. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another question from here at the audience of the museum.
Hi, my name is Erica Evans. I'm from Baltimore, Maryland, but actually go to school here in D.C. And my question for you, Congressman Paul, was, do you think that the success of your candidacy, and you've touched on this a little bit already, at least in terms of visibility, means that political discourse and debate in this country is evolving or improving? You talked about it's easier for you this year than it was before. Do you see that continuing?
In some ways, there's been a tremendous improvement in spite of the system, in spite of the laws, in spite of the exclusion, in spite of the ridicule, in spite of the mainstream media. But because there's a new format around and available to us, and that, of course, is the Internet. I would say 90% of the success in the reaching out to people had been through the Internet. Because even if I did get coverage, whether it was on the debates or, on the news, most of the time it was ridicule. But in spite of it all, I was very grateful to be in the debates because that's what stirred people's interest. Then they'd go to my website, and then they spontaneously organize. They have these meetup groups. Over 1,700 meetup groups got together. So people come to me, and I'll say, tell us how to organize and raise all that money. It isn't that. It is the excitement about an idea that people spontaneously get behind. So if you have the right idea and you still have a vehicle, and I will truthfully say that programs like NPR that has NPR, we have been treated fairly. Radio talk shows, we can be. But the big one is on the Internet. I mean, that is what brought people together. And I have made the claim, which I'm absolutely sure I'm correct, if the election had been held on the Internet, we would have won.
Here's an email we got from Stewart in Durham, North Carolina. Correction, Mr. Paul, we got into Vietnam long before Johnson. I think it was Eisenhower who first got us involved. But anyway, let's see.
I could debate that one, too. Right,
let's see if we get
I might even concede something on it, too.
Let's get Max on the line, and Max is with us from Miramar in Florida.
Oh, yes, Mr. Paul, I was just wondering what the Roosevelt New Deal-like government subsidies like Social Security and all the others would you get rid of? And would you keep the Montgomery GI Bill?
Well, a GI Bill for military personnel, that's part of the pay that they get. So, no, I wouldn't want to attack that. I'd want to try to improve that as well. As one place where we really neglect is the medical care of our veterans. It's atrocious. And both as a congressman and as a physician, I can verify that we just don't take good care of people. No, I would, in my theory, a theoretical position in the Constitution, yes, everything should be repealed. But, of course, I live in the real world, and that's not going to happen. But the socialist has this ideal of total socialism, total ownership by the state, total control. And they take it by bits and pieces. So I would take it by bits and pieces. And my whole idea, in order to get us back into a sensible position where we aren't dependent on China for everything, is we have to cut spending, balance the budget, restore value to the dollar,
and which programs,
and live within our mean.
Which programs is that?
That is exactly what I'm getting to.
Okay.
And that is, we spend $1 trillion managing an empire overseas, and we don't need it. We can bring our troops home, save hundreds of billions of dollars, and save enough money to balance the budget. And as I say many, many times, you don't put anybody out into the streets. But if we continue as a nation to do what we're doing, continue to destroy the dollar, no matter how many times you increase the payments to Social Security beneficiaries, there is no way you're going to be taken care of because everybody's going to suffer. The only way we can take care of those who depend on it, whether it's an educational program or a medical program, but what do the conservatives on the Republican side say? Well, we're going to cut health care for the children. And I may support that in theory, but it's a ridiculous political position. It's overseas military spending, which is the great threat to us financially and the great threat to us because it undermines our civil liberties. And at the same time, it increases tremendously the odds of us getting hit by terrorists.
Would you do what Ronald Reagan didn't and eliminate the Department of Education?
Certainly. But again, it would be my priorities. Priorities are pretty important if you want to get back. So if I had charge, and you don't have to worry, it's not going to happen, and we had the Congress, I wouldn't start with the Department of Education or medical care for children. I would start with the empire, and because that is what is the greatest threat to liberty and to the financial stability of this country.
Ron Paul is going to stay with us. Thanks, Max, for the phone call. And we'll take more callers, and we'll get more questions from here at the audience at the museum. Ken Rudin is also with us. Give us a call if you'd like to speak with the candidate, 800-989-8255. You can send us an email, talk@npr.org, and join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. I'm Neil Conan at the museum, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today, we're with Texas Congressman Ron Paul, a candidate for the Republican presidential nomination, author of the new book, The Revolution, A Manifesto. He calls his agenda a peaceful continuation of the American Revolution and the principles of the U.S. Founding Fathers. You can read an excerpt from it on our website at npr.org. Also with us is Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor. And we're taking your questions. What do you think Ron Paul contributed to the campaign? 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And you can read what other listeners have to say on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation.
Congressman, we're talking about not only what you accomplished, but what you hope to accomplish. I think it's fair to say that you may not be the Republican nominee. And we also keep asking, what does Hillary Clinton want? Well, what does Ron Paul want? I mean, is it a speaking spot at the convention, or is it a change in the platform? And what do you support his plan to do if there is no change in the platform?
Well, me personally, I don't care that much about speaking at the convention, but it would symbolically mean that we have gained enough influence where the message was very important, and that to me would be important. So my goal from the very beginning to now is always to promote these beliefs that I've expressed, and whether if it's enhanced by winning a congressional seat or getting to a convention or spending a year in debates and promoting this, then I have a great deal of satisfaction doing it that way. But there's not one thing that would say, well, if I could speak at the convention, that's the climax of my political career, and then I can retire. No, that wouldn't.
But what about your supporters? I mean, when they go to Minneapolis, is there going to be disenchantment? Is it going to be anger, disillusionment?
Not if I can help it. They might.
You haven't endorsed him. You do plan to endorse John McCain before the convention?
No, I don't plan to do it. Like I said, unless he changes his positions, well, he agrees still, with me on the war and a few other things.
He's still looking for a vice presidential candidate.
Yeah, and I've been waiting on the call. I keep waiting, and I haven't heard it ring. No, they can go, and we will have hundreds of people there. I mean, there'll be delegates. I've had a lot of people come up and say, oh, they're a Romney delegate, but they couldn't, you know, quite swing it as a Paul delegate, but I'm really a Paul supporter. We're going to have a lot of supporters there, and we're going to have a rally next door, and it's going to be a peaceful rally. It's not going to, ask for disruption. I don't like some of these parliamentary fights, especially when they change the rules in the Bill of Streams. To me, that's not worth it. To me, it's a philosophic struggle. Ideas have consequences, and it's sort of weird that I'm in politics because I'm much more interested in the ideas that I've been trying to express.
Let's get another question from the audience here at the museum.
Hi, I'm Sarah Wiley. I'm from Kansas City, Missouri. My question for Congressman Paul is, in light of recent events in China and Myanmar, what do you believe the U.S. government response should be to emergencies at home and abroad?
Well, for the most part, not a whole lot, because if the government was the size it should be and we were doing what we should be doing, and that is very little, the country would be, this $1 trillion a year that we're spending overseas fighting wars would be back at home, and people would be much wealthier, and then you would have the fantastic response, which would be manyfold greater than we even do under these circumstances, because the American people are so generous, and they donate billions of dollars, and they would rush to help. So I would say that the system that I would foresee, it would be so much more, so much wealthier that we would be able to help so many more people, but it wouldn't be government-to-government aid. That is what becomes so risky. So when we take money from poor people in this country and give it to governments in poor countries overseas, it ends up hurting the poor people over there. It becomes a political tool. And simply on an earthquake and all, I still think it should be through the volunteer organizations because they would have so much more available. Once again, priorities are such that we have a lot of ability to help, and there's nothing wrong if there's need some rescue operations and they welcome us and they would take us. I mean, I'm not going to lie awake worrying about that, and that could be available. I worry more about the fact that we're in 150 countries and 700 bases overseas and that we might be next door. But if we are and we had military there, they could help. But this idea that I'm supposed to vote to tax all Americans now when they can barely pay for their gasoline bill and say, well, we're going to take care of the whole world when we're not even positive it will be efficient, compared to a system where everybody would have so much more. And since we are a generous nation, I wouldn't worry that much that we wouldn't fulfill the role and meet our moral responsibilities.
Yet during the tsunami and again during this crisis in Myanmar, a lot of the aid that is made available is the fact that the United States Navy was there, able to rush heavy lift helicopters, water purification, medical help, that sort of thing. Would they be there in a Ron Paul administration?
That would be a pretty hard stretch to say the reason that we want to maintain our empire because maybe on occasion, once in a while, we can provide some humanitarian aid. I would say the greatest humanitarian aid would be stop bombing people and stop planning to go into Iran. That would be the real humanitarian aids.
Let's see if we get another caller on the line. And this is Bob. Bob with us from Cleveland, Ohio.
Hi. I'm listening to the conversation, and I'm wondering if you recognize that there is a similarity between Ron Paul and Barack Obama. And it seems to me, as an independent voter, in listening to them, they tend to be the most responsive. By that I mean they seem to answer the questions that are asked of them. And I'm wondering why it seems to be resonating more on the Democratic side than on the Republican side. Is it just the message? Or, is the Republican Party just, more of the Ronald Reagan philosophy, thou shalt not attack another Republican?
I'm not sure I have a real good answer on that, because it is true there are a lot of similarities, and a lot of the support I get on the college campuses, there'll be a lot of young people in the crowds with Obama shirts on, and we'll talk a lot, and there is a definite overlap. But if you get down into the philosophy, there definitely is a difference. I mean, you haven't heard Obama talk about the Federal Reserve System.
Not much. No.
And or really bringing our troops home from around the world. But there is indeed.
How's your bowling, by the way?
Well, you know, I've been thinking about maybe challenging him to the game of bowling. That one I might be safe, but not to basketball, of course. I don't shoot hoops very well.
I was speaking more to resonating with the base, and he seems to be resonating with his base. And you're a conservative Republican, although not a social conservative, but it doesn't seem to be resonating. Yet the kind of double talk that Mitt Romney and John McCain seem to speak somehow seems to be, you know, giving them momentum. And I'll listen to your comments.
Giving who momentum? Right,
thanks for the call, Bob.
McCain
momentum. Yeah, and I think that represents the fact that the base of the Republican Party keeps shrinking, and the diehard Bushites are there. And so, to me, the biggest challenge I had was to deliver, the old right Republican message to Republicans who have accepted the neoconservative approach. So, to me, that's the biggest challenge, and there's no doubt that my message has been as well received as to independents and Democrats as it has been to the Republican base. So for each of the votes we've got in the Republican primary, we probably have two votes outside the Republican Party as well.
Here's an email question from Penelope. How can Ron Paul claim to be pro-liberty when he is anti-choice for women?
Well, I think if you're pro-liberty and you're pro-life, you have to be pro-life to be pro-liberty. And the question has nothing to do really with determining what the woman isn't the issue. The only question is there a human life involved? And I, as an OB doctor, know very well there's a human life involved. And if I do anything wrong, I get sued. And if you have an accident or there's a murder, it's a double homicide, and it's a very real thing. The only way you can see this in the proper perspective is whether or not the argument is that the woman has the right to her body and you have no right to say a word about that. Well, in one way, that's sort of like saying you have a right to your home and you have no right to say anything about what happens in your home, so you can kill your kids if you don't like them. Well, there's a baby inside the womb, and the woman has this, this right to her life, which I strongly believe. But at the same time, not many people go up and say, well, in the ninth month, she has the right to kill the baby. Nobody argues that. But if you stick to your argument, you have to. You have to defend the right of the woman to kill the child, which the Supreme Court has legalized right before birth.
They've said viability is what their test is, and it's
the
first trimester
abortion,
as a practical matter.
You're allowed to do abortions in the third trimester. And the partial
to save the life of a woman.
Well, and it depends. Maybe they will use psychiatric reasons to save the life. I mean, maybe she's pretty nervous or something. There's always excuses and ways.
What about the first?
Anyway, okay. Then the other example is, if in the second trimester. Right now, viability is down to less than a pound, and yet just the other day, a young girl had a baby. She becomes frightened and alone, so she kills the baby. She's arrested for murder, yet. If that woman had come to me, I'd have been paid a lot of money. You know, I could have been paid money to abort the child. There's something awfully inconsistent with it. We're sending some disjointed message to a whole generation, and it's not the easiest thing. The one thing I do is I take the constitutional approach. It's not the federal government's prerogative to write laws legalizing it or prohibiting it.
It didn't. It was the Supreme Court.
Well, that's the federal government. As you know, it's a federal court. So they legislated. It was an absolute court case they shouldn't have never heard. Texas had every right to regulate this. We regulate manslaughter and injury and all kind of other things. But all of a sudden, this one is different. And they come over and they have one ruling, and it's for the whole country. And it's been a knockdown, drag-out fight ever since. I think the states should take care of it. And some of you say, well, some states might, some right-to-life people don't want it. And they say, oh, there might be one state that won't do it. And others will say, well, maybe they will. So more difficult the problem is, the more you want to have a local solution so you don't have one mistake that is supposed to take care of everything for everybody in this country, either a Supreme Court ruling or a law passed by Congress. But you cannot have respect for liberty if you don't have respect for life. And I do have respect for life, and yet I understand the issue pretty well.
A Republican Congressman and presidential candidate Ron Paul with us here at the Newseum. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And a couple of quick last questions, Ken.
A quick question. Ralph Nader says to him, is at least, there's no difference between the Republican and Democratic Party. Do you feel that way? There's no difference between Obama, assuming he's a nominee, and John McCain? And would you advise your supporters to sit out the election in November or go third party? What would you say?
I wouldn't tell them to sit out, but I wouldn't tell them what to do, because some come from the left. I have a lot of Green Party people who support me because they know my position, and they are very anti-war, and they like civil liberties, you know, and I defend environment through property rights differently than they do. So, no, I wouldn't tell them what to do. But as far as difference goes, no difference. I mean, I like Obama, what he says on foreign policy. He'll probably be maybe a little bit better, but foreign policy, regardless of whether you have Republicans or Democrats, foreign policy never changes. Monetary policy, though nobody talks about it, very important, it never changes. Domestic welfare policy never changes, regardless of the policy. So, yes, George Wallace was right.
Times worth difference.
No. Here's an email question from Kurt in Renton, Washington. Yes or no or nothing in between, please. Is Representative Paul going to run for president in the general election?
No.
Ron Paul, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Ron Paul is a congressman from Texas and a candidate for president on the Republican Party line. He joined us here at the museum. He's also the author of a new book called The Revolution, A Manifesto. And Ken Rudin, we still have time to look ahead to next week's primaries in the Democratic side of the race. And those are in Kentucky and in Oregon.
Right. Well, Oregon is a male-only ballot. Women cannot vote in Oregon.
Right. It's a strange rule.
That's right. I don't know why they have that. But in Kentucky, it should be another good state for Hillary Clinton, as it was in West Virginia. A lot of rural, blue-collar white voters. I think Obama should do well in the cities of Louisville, perhaps Lexington, but again, another good state for her. But Barack Obama says that when all is said and done after the counting in Oregon, which he is favored to win, he will have a majority of the pledged delegates. And I don't know if he's certainly not going to declare victory on May 20th, but you may see even more of a shift of superdelegates going his way.
And at that point, Senator Clinton, there's been a decided change in rhetoric in the past couple of weeks, at least, run-up to West Virginia. And Senator Clinton does not seem to be attacking Senator Obama the way she had been. Are we seeing white flags being raised?
Well, she still says she's in it to the end. She still insists that she would be a better candidate, better nominee than Barack Obama. But again, there's a lot of questions involved, what her future is, how to retire her debt, what to do about Michigan, Florida. And the question which is still out there, which sounds preposterous to some people, but that is still out there, that her possibility of being on part of an Obama ticket. So all those questions are out there. And again, they have yet to be answered. And as they have said, she'll probably still be there through June 3rd.
And it seems like this presidential campaign has gone on forever. Nevertheless, it's only three warmer weeks before the primaries are all over.
But, we always complain. We complained in 2000, 2004 that it was over in February. This is, if you follow politics and love the system, and states that have never had the opportunity to express themselves, this is a great year, a great campaign.
Well, surely you'll remember the last time West Virginia played a big role in the presidential
1960,
race.
That's right.
Yeah,
Kennedy Humphrey.
Ken Rudin is NPR's political junkie. He joins us every week here at the museum. And, Ken, always glad to have you on the program.
Thanks, Neil.
Today. And you can also read his column, The Political Junkie, at npr.org. I'm Neil Conan, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
I want to shoot guns, or butter my bread. I work in the towns, or cultivate the prairies. And you can believe the future's ahead. I'll give the young the right to vote as soon as they mature. But spare the rod and spoil the child to help them feel secure. And if I win election day, I might give you a job. I'll sign a bill to help the poor to show I'm not a snob. I'll open my door, I'm charging no admission. And you can be sure I'll give you my hand. I want to grow up to be a politician and take over. Yeah, I'll make you glad you got me in with everything I do. And I'll defend until the end the old red, white, and blue. I want to grow up to be a politician and take over this beautiful land. beautiful land.